Welcome into another edition, the latest edition of the Irish Illustrated Insider. I am John Bryce of both Irish Illustrated and FootballScoop.com, joined by Drew Mintock of Irish Illustrated, and soon to be joined by Tim O'Malley. Tim Priester will not be with us today. He's handling some personal things, so hopefully he's having a great Thursday. But Drew, you and I were not a part of Monday's podcast. We both had other things going on. So let's talk about what our takeaways were from last Saturday's blue and gold game, even as Notre Dame is on the practice field here today and still yet has one more practice before officially concluding spring camp 2025.
Yeah, I think something after, kind of having the replay on of the game too, is I think my first reaction, we noticed like a lot of young players and who's emerging, like, which makes sense. That's kind of where my eyes gravitated to. But like, even going back through it, looking at guys like, Jannarity and Price didn't get much run, but just how well, like, good he looked running behind a more complete offensive line. And he really was doing one cut, finding his hole and going. Like, the things we kind of criticized him for not doing as much last year, I think he looked really excellent. Bryce Young, I know it was discussed on Monday a little bit, like he had that sack, but I realized like now that that was on Emile Wagner and he kind of stunted inside and beat him up the middle pretty easily. I thought that was like a really nice move. So I think something I wanted to like touch on is just that like the good players who didn't play a lot, like when they were in there, they really flashed too. And I think that's something that kind of stood out to me. Another thing is, Carson Hobbs, like I know we talked about his play, but we saw him talk about how confident he is and just like saying he thinks he's the fastest guy in the team. And I think you also see how in rewatching it, how much confidence plays into his game. Like every play he made, he kind of celebrated like he knew he was going to make that type of play. I think it seems like a pretty, maybe at times come across as cocky, but it seems like a pretty healthy confidence. And then I think we talked a lot about Jack Larson's catch over the Don Shuler, but I think that throw earlier to Kevin Ballman was just may have been Carr's best throw of the day, which didn't maybe look like it as much from up in the press box, but that was just like a perfect throw. Well-timed, two guy defenders were starting to come up for Carr. And yeah, so I think some of the other plays that you really, I didn't notice in the moment, like really stuck out watching it.
Yeah, some good points by you there, Drew. And for me, I'll start with where you ended, the CJ Carr throws. And when you talk to people who watch the game, be it scouts or other people from campus, even though neither one of those plays to the tight end resulted in a touchdown, both of those were NFL throws. Those were pro throws. And in speaking with people over the course of this week, those were the type of things that Notre Dame has seen quite a bit of this spring from CJ Carr. His accuracy has been really good, I'm told. He's had a strong ability to throw off platform and still with great accuracy. Drew, I know you and I have talked specifically about his off-platform throw from the week before in the open practice inside the IAC where he rolled to his right and hit K.K. Smith for what was maybe an 8-yard gain, right around an 8-yard gain, and Smith had somebody draped all over him. But it was the execution and C.J. Carr's ability to throw off schedule, off platform, and still deliver a very accurate ball in a place that only K.K. Smith could catch it. And that's the thing about those two balls to the tight end. They were both in places that only the tight end could catch it, and it would either be a great chunk play for the offense or an incomplete pass and you live to fight another down. Obviously we saw some good things from the other quarterbacks. You mentioned Bryce Young officially with the one sack. I think in a live game, he would have had 1 to 2 more sacks. When you go back and rewatch, he had some penetration where you can tell that he very clearly pulled up kind of waiting on the whistle to blow. So those were some elements that stuck out to me as well. Drew, what are some other things, either individuals? Hobbs plays with tremendous confidence. You noted that. And you can tell he feeds himself off of that confidence. And I think the more he plays, the more he has a chance to have his teammates feeding off of that confidence as well. But maybe who are a couple of others or some other elements of the game that stood out to you? Real briefly for me, I'll note, I thought Notre Dame's defensive length in the back end showed up again on Saturday. And that's an element that we've talked at great length about. But you can just see Notre Dame has gotten so much faster and so much more athletic, particularly in its back seven and its back four since Marcus Freeman's arrival. I thought that was very clearly on display.
Yeah, I think kind of along those lines, too, as you see all these players out there and then you start thinking, too, about the guys that aren't even playing right now, whether it's injuries or just kind of holding them out, like, that's not even all the talent. Like, those aren't even guys necessarily who will start next year that were really starting to flash. So I agree with that. I think something like, again, in rewatching it and seeing what CJ Carr can do, I think it's good perspective to also think like Notre Dame finished as a national runner up last year. That's like the barometer of where this program wants to exceed. They're not trying to just like make the playoffs again next year. And I think watching CJ Carr, and I mean, obviously he's only been on campus for a year and a half. Like, he's had some injuries, like, or even Kenny mentioned, you would agree. But I think we know what the floor with a guy like CJ, like Steve Angeli would be. But we also see what these other two could potentially do. And I think in rewatching it, that really stuck out to me is like Notre Dame isn't just trying to like get by. They're not trying to just get 10 wins. And if you want to be that type of program, in addition to them playing well and starting to prove it on the field, I think it really stuck out to me that like this makes sense, because you're not trying to just be a program who can, you know, kind of be respectable. You're trying to take that next step.
Yeah, definitively. In Marcus Freeman's first year of 2022, Notre Dame in a lot of ways was trying to win games around its quarterback and not because of its quarterback. And I think that the program has grown in leaps and strides from that point. It's now positioned to have a multi-year starter. Whoever wins the starting competition, I think it's pretty safe to say that CJ Carr exited that spring game as a clear front runner, but still a good competition. Drew, we need to talk a little bit about the transfer portal. Not anything earth-shattering of yet. A little bit of surprise with Kennedy Urlacher entering the transfer portal. We can talk more about that. And we've got questions for the Burning Up the Board segment when O'Malley joins us that I'm sure we'll have a chance to go more in-depth. And then Reno Monteforte, the surprise winner of the long snapper competition and the guy who held that job for much of last year. But we had already started to see over the course of spring that Reno had kind of been replaced in that role, and that Notre Dame was looking for a little bit more size. But thus far, only a couple of guys into the portal for Notre Dame. Important to note, it opened on Wednesday, April 16th. It runs through Friday, April 25th. As I've referenced before, Friday, April 25th is the deadline to notify a team that you want to go into the portal. That team then has 48 hours to officially enter your name into the portal. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some portal entries, be it Notre Dame or elsewhere, that don't trickle out until Monday the 28th. But that's the time frame, Drew.
Yeah, I think, I mean, going with, no, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I think so fans should be aware, like, you kind of got to get through next weekend into Monday morning before you can finally take a sigh of relief and know, like, that process has played out for the spring. Going back to Urlacher, I mean, I think the biggest thing, I mean, it's a little surprised at the timing. Like, as you said, Notre Dame still has some practices going on. So, you know, it's a little interesting that he didn't want to take advantage of those before kind of finally coming to a decision. But I mean, I think it just speaks to kind of the health of the room. And as Notre Dame kind of recruits, he continues to recruit better, it really develops depth. Like, that's probably something fans kind of need to get used to, because good players who flash in the spring, who show they can do some stuff and add some traits, like, that doesn't mean they're going to play. Whereas before, when Notre Dame didn't have that level of depth, those guys would need to have a role. And if they weren't playing, they'd be very clearly they weren't performing. I don't know that we can expect that anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. And look, it is a crowded house at that position. You know, a Don Shuler is going to start at one of the safety positions, but there's great competition beyond that, be it Jalen Stroman, the transfer from Virginia Tech. Obviously, Notre Dame doesn't sign him without expecting him to be a factor, even though he's not been a factor in the spring. He'll have that opportunity. You got Luke Talich competing back there. Then I think Tabron Benny Powell has been a factor back there, if I'm not mistaken. So you've got a number of guys that have been there. And then you had Urlacher also in that mix. So you can only play so many. Urlacher played a lot. He was emerged as a core special teams figure for Notre Dame during that run to the college football playoff in 2024. Probably exceeded some expectations along the way. He was not the most decorated member of Notre Dame's 2024 signing class, but he showed up consistently, and he showed up and started flashing great instincts and ability very early on and carved a role for himself. And now I think this is just about reading the landscape and seeing that there's a lot of bodies at that position. Notre Dame's depth overall in the secondary, I think, is pretty strong, but it's especially strong at that safety spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Reno Monteforte, I mean, I think he put a post on social media yesterday kind of thanking, you know, everyone and the coaching staff, the fans and stuff like that. I think, I mean, I guess it's worth commending. He's a guy walked on. He's 5'7", 205 pounds, and he won that long snapping job after Notre Dame lost a guy like Michael Venison, who was just kind of like a staple, consistent long snapper. I know he, you know, only did place kicks and not punting. So I don't know if he could have done much in terms of running down the field and tackling. But I think, I mean, that's quite a feat for somebody, for a team that went to the national title game, for him to kind of carve out that role when he, I mean, he was competing against guys who were 6'5", 230 pounds. So I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and speaking of that, it's Joseph Vinci who handled the top long snapping duties last weekend, and he's 6'4", 230. So Notre Dame very clearly looking for a little more stature there. When you talk about the portal and some other possibilities for Notre Dame, I don't want to as much go name specific as I do position specific, but it's been indicated to us, obviously, that Notre Dame would not be surprised to lose a member from the running back room. And there's certainly been we've heard Juwan Sider himself say he doesn't have the same philosophy and approach as Dylan McCullough. He's not going to potentially play five or six guys because he has a jobs board in his office and one player fits a certain job, and that's going to be his role every game no matter what. And so we didn't even see Jeremiah Love as expected last Saturday, and we only saw Jadarian Price get six carries, but then Aeneas Williams and Jabron Payne and Kedron Young combined for almost 30 carries. And so again, much like the safety position, there's only one football. Notre Dame has a very healthy running backs room. I don't think anybody at Notre Dame is sitting here expecting that room to return intact by the fall. All three quarterbacks did some positive things. All four quarterbacks, not really counting Blake Hebert into that. But it would be a shock if Notre Dame returned the trio of Angeli, Carr, and Minchie for the fall, the same way it would be a shock if Notre Dame returned all five of its top running backs in the fall.
Yeah, and kind of add to what we even said about the safety room. Like, these are rooms where you're expecting to lose somebody because the room is in such a good place, because you have so many talented guys emerging. And, I mean, guys understandably want to play, especially in this era where there are other offers to get paid out there. And you don't really know what the future holds necessarily. If you're a guy like, I don't know, I know we don't want to get too much into speculation, but if you're a guy like Aeneas Williams and you did show what you could do towards the end of last year, especially in the playoff run, I think he had over 80 yards receiving and 45, 50 yards rushing and kind of a smaller role. You don't necessarily know that's going to increase, and that has nothing to do with what he's done to improve this spring either. It's just maybe the most talented room in the country.
And of note is that in theory, this will be the most wild, wild west portal period yet to remain. The House settlement is expected to pass and would go into effect July 1st for revenue sharing. And then there would be third party NIL deal reviews by Deloitte, the international accounting powerhouse. And so until then, there's a lot of money grab going on right now in college athletics. I've referenced before that some basketball players who have entered the portal this month are getting $1.75 to $2 million. There's some talk of some $3 million offers out there for college basketball players. And these, obviously, if they were guaranteed lottery picks, they wouldn't be sticking around in college basketball. They'd be going into this summer's NBA draft. So this is considered the last moment of true silly money in college athletics right now. And because of that, guys are more eager to test their market value. And it might be a disaster for you, like Tennessee's departed quarterback, Nico Iamaliava, who I believe took a pay cut to end up going to UCLA. But there are other guys that are absolutely recognizing the marketplace and getting offered more money than ever before. And so that's just a factor of it. And that's one thing to continue to watch. Notre Dame has its final practice of spring 2025, next Wednesday, I believe. So Notre Dame is on the practice field or was on the practice field today, Thursday morning, for practice number 14. Obviously, Notre Dame takes Easter weekend off every year from its football program and tries to give guys times with their family and times with their friends and teammates and things of that nature. But Notre Dame will wrap its 2025 spring practice next week. We'll wrap this first segment right now because we will be joined by the illustrious Tim O'Malley in the second segment for Burning Up the Boards here on Irish Illustrated Insider.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Looking to upgrade your wardrobe? Founded by Notre Dame alum Gal Wang, you've seen ESQ's custom clothing on the player walk and all of your favorite players and coaches. With more than a decade of making the best bespoke clothing available, ESQ will help you look and feel your best. From a perfect-fitting suit or sport coat, shirt, or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season, check out esqclothing.com and book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention Irish Illustrated and get 10% off your entire purchase. That's esqclothing.com. We begin segment two, Burning Up the Boards, with Bobby, 1556. And I think this is a question that could have been asked last spring as well, guys, but maybe more pertinent now. On Monday's episode, you guys discussed the depth of talent at running back and that it'll be hard to get four backs involved. It's been reported that Jeremiah Love has been cross-training a wide receiver this spring. Any chance he's been doing that to have him on the field while also getting the three remaining running backs involved in the offense?
Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's a way to keep him on the field more. I think that in adding to his versatility, and obviously he's the most explosive player on your offense. So if you can do more with that in the passing game and get involved, I don't know that I think Juwan Sider has kind of discussed like how he's only going to prepare for sure three running backs, maybe four. So I don't know that will necessarily is designed to increase the number of people he can get involved in the game plan week to week, though.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more Mike Denbrock transitioning into year two. We saw Jeremiah Love start to get some work last year in Denbrock's offense at that wide receiver position. We know that he can do it. We know that Jeremiah Love wants to prove that he's as versatile as possible. And we've heard Jeremiah Love himself tell us point blank, I'm an every down back. I don't consider myself a first and second down back. I'm a 1-4 down back, and this is part of that process. So I think it showcases Jeremiah Love's versatility. It gives you a way to get arguably college football's one or two most electrifying players on the field even more in the 2025 season. But I don't think it's an avenue to necessarily ensure that you have those other running backs on the field more. And again, Juwan Sider has made it clear, as we discussed in the first segment, he doesn't have the same approach that Dylan McCullough did, and he doesn't want to play more than three to sometimes four running backs in a game.
Yeah, I don't think it's much for helping extra running backs as much as it augments the offense if Jeremiah Love can split out and not catch flat passes and screen passes, that because Jeremiah Love in the screen game and Jarian Price in the screen game last year, there were big moments, but everything else was average depth of target was negative 0.5 yards. So I think they want to get Jeremiah Love, as we saw, Bryce, when we were sitting there in that first practice. We're like, it was Chuck Freebie and I actually, we talked to you about it. I was like, who is that? Because I didn't know the number. It was Jeremiah Love. I think they'd like to see Jeremiah Love running some slant routes, catching the ball at full speed and going. But I think it's for Jeremiah Love in the offense, maybe Jadarian Price in the offense. I don't think it's like, I want to work four guys in.
Oh, sorry. Real quickly, Drew, I would just say, look how much we've all talked about Eli Raridan over the course of this spring and how well he looks. So if you're able to have Eli Raridan maybe stretching that linebacker downfield and you're bringing Jeremiah Love behind that, cutting across the middle, think about the potential explosiveness and damage that you can get because of the positional versatility and the ability to line up Jeremiah Love in different spots, particularly if you split him out as some wide receiver reps.
Yeah, and I was just going to add, I remember talking to Jeremiah Love when he was like kind of the summer, or like the beginning of summer before he enrolled at Notre Dame. And he's always been somebody I feel like who's cognizant of his workload and not wanting to, you know, I think that's something McCullough really sold him on coming into Notre Dame is like, we're not going to just, you know, work you to the point where you're getting banged up and beaten up all the time. So by going out wide, he can kind of get more involved in the offense and be on the field more without necessarily like taking additional beating, which is what also benefits Notre Dame as well. But I think he has always had that foresight.
And let's be fair, like, you know, he started doing this last spring, so maybe a whole calendar year of it in another spring is necessary for him to be adept at it at a top tier level. I mentioned depth of target. I wasn't exaggerating. I kind of guessed. Jeremiah Love's average depth of target was 0.6 yards per pass last year. His average yards per route run was 1.27. So he was not a downfield threat. They're looking to make him a bit more of a downfield threat. And by the way, when you're Jeremiah Love and going pro after this year, you can also go to your running backs coach and say, could we make me look a little bit more like the most versatile running back in the league too, so I could go to the draft? It's not exactly hurting your offense to make Jeremiah Love more versatile in it.
No, and I think I've said it before. I covered Alvin Kamara at Tennessee. I think Jeremiah Love is very much in that mold, maybe has a little bit better size overall than Kamara, but their games remind me a lot of one another. And when Sean Payton first drafted Kamara into the Saints, they split him out wide. They did a lot of different things with him. Tennessee, especially under former offensive coordinator Mike DeBoard, RIP, he passed away this week, great man. But Mike DeBoard did some good stuff like that with Kamara, lining him up in the slot, working some different ways to get him some mismatches, particularly just absolutely abused Georgia a couple of years with Kamara lined up in different places. And I see that same type of ability for Jeremiah Love. And one more quick note here as we were record this podcast, and we just talked about the transfer portal. Notre Dame graduate kicker Zach Yoakum has declared that he will enter the transfer portal.
Just a quick note on Zach Yoakum. That guy came in and kicked at Ohio State on 30 minutes notice for the first time in his life as a true freshman, and he grew up 10 minutes from the stadium. Yeah. That's incredible that he did that. So kudos to Zach Yoakum for being able to pull that off, because he literally found out 30 minutes before the game when McPherson was injured, you got to kick off, walk on, go do it. And that's that takes a lot. So good for him. Next question. Speaking of special teams, Denver Maximus, special teams have really taken a backseat this spring to the big headliner of the QB battle. Do you see Indy improving on their kicking game that struggled midseason? How do you see Rendell improving after one season of American football under his belt?
I think that in talking with the coaches this spring, and certainly what we've witnessed, is that Marty Biagi, I ask him point blank, James Rendell is a better punter because he does what every day? And he said he does everything consistently, everything technically that we ask him to do, he is doing consistently day after day. So we probably aren't going to hear Marcus Freeman talking about James Rendell being a five-tool punter anymore. What I imagine that Notre Dame hopes it's able to do in discussion to James Rendell is talk about what a consistent punter he is. We saw more consistency. There were days when we were allowed to, at practice for the first 4 to 5 periods, and I would drift out to watch the offensive line, and the specialists would work on the furthest east practice field outdoors. And Rendell did appear much more consistent. He was cleaner with his op time. He was getting the ball off more cleanly. Remember, Marty Biagi, and he didn't laugh when he said this, was like, James Rendell didn't really know American football until he walked into the stadium at Texas A&M. And then obviously that's the largest stadium he'd ever been in. And he was like, he didn't really even know the dimensions of it until he walked into Texas A&M. Like, and I don't think Marty was exaggerating. I think he was driving a point home that, like, this guy didn't know what it was until he knew what it was, and he was kicking in front of 110,000 fans. And so every experience of last year will benefit James Rendell. He was a much better punter the last 8 to 10 games of the season for Notre Dame than he was the first six to eight games for Notre Dame. We've seen that consistency. Noah Burnett, I was told, looked like my golf swing on that first miss. He chunked the ball about 6 inches behind the tee. And unfortunately, I know that all too well. And so his other two kicks were clean. They wanted to keep getting him confidence. They're going to keep getting him confidence. Noah Burnett will be their place kicker, barring injury. They have a lot of confidence in him. They believe what we saw out of his last couple of made field goals, striking the ball well, particularly seeing the rotation on the ball. That's something they were heartily encouraged by. And then I would expect the freshman, Eric Schmidt, to have the best chance to win the kickoff competition.
Yeah, and I think I just want to note, going back to Rendell too, is like we mentioned, it's like the biggest stadium he's ever been in. But like, I don't think, especially for like, I just quickly looked it up, so this is like Wikipedia, but there's one rugby stadium in Australia that seats as many people as Notre Dame Stadium does. And obviously Notre Dame Stadium is not even the biggest in college football. So I do think, just in terms of like the crowd and the pressure for, college athlete, like that's kind of unheard of. So there is just like from the pressure and just getting used to that, that is a whole nother world. And we saw how he got used to that and really stepped up to playing, kicking his best balls by the time he got to the playoffs too. So I think that's just like a really credit to him and adjusting to a world and a level of pressure he hadn't dealt with. Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a lot Noah Brunette can add as he kind of gets healthy and gets back. I know we've referenced before his 2023 season. He went 19 for 20. He made all of his six attempts over 40 yards. I know he regressed last year and went 15 for 21. That includes going 2 for 4 beyond 50, and then 5 of his 6 misses came beyond 40. So there's certainly some consistency in the deeper kicks he can get back to that he kind of regressed on last year. But I think even at his worst, he still made 71% of his kicks and was only missed, I think, in the last 2 years, 2 kicks inside of 40 yards. So,
yeah. And when I talked to Noah Brunette midway through spring camp and I asked him about it, he said he was regaining his form, felt like he was getting back into the groove, the natural leg slot that he was accustomed to and that he utilized during that All-ACC 2023 campaign. And I asked him where he was feeling comfortable, and I believe he told me out to 50 to 55 yards, or that's his target where he wants people, wants the team to feel like they can start to count on him to make those triples. So let's continue with our Burning Up the Board segment here with a question from True to Irish. Should Notre Dame stand pat, or is there any area where a portal need might be filled? It seems this team has few weaknesses other than maybe the wide receiver area. Do you see Dawson as comparable to Howard Cross in terms of a get after the running back, quarterback type of dude? Thanks.
Starting with staying pat, I firmly believe that because injuries are going to happen, you're going to need a tight end. And I know everybody's like, well, Kevin Bowman's a veteran tight end and Eli Raritan's a blossoming tight end, and you have Flanagan coming in who is battling an ankle injury. I liked Jack Larson. Ty Washington's there. They use tight ends. They use 3 tight ends on kickoff return. They use 2 tight ends on, it'll be, no matter what, it'll be 30% of their formations. This is a running team. You're going to use 2 tight ends. You don't have to feature the 12 package. You just got to convince a tight end that will come, that will help you, that won't make a young tight end mad when that happens. There is a little bit of wiggle room here. You're not going to anger Cooper Flanagan or Ty Washington or Eli Raritan or Bowman. If you care about Jack Larson, when I thought he looked really good in the blue goal game, if Jack Larson looks like that every practice, the tight end you bring in is probably taking some of those snaps. But I'm going back to my pal Tony Alford. It's not happy camp, man. You should not stand pat if you're 1 injury away from trouble at a position. And I think they're 1 injury away from trouble at that position. That might be the only one that they're in trouble, but I think they're 1 injury away from an issue there.
Yeah, and you do wonder if, like, even if they could find somebody like the next Davis Sherwood or somebody like that who's reliable, who can perfect. Do some of the different things, but yeah, isn't going to threaten any of the younger guys or make you feel like you brought in somebody to take their spot. But I agree. Other than that, I don't really see any areas of concern or like, oh, they really need to address this. I mean, I think kind of based on what Freeman said, if there's somebody who jumps in the portal that you can't really pass on at a certain position, like a certain wide receiver that you really need to evaluate and say, this type of talent is worth it. I'm not sure you're going to get that in the spring, but I would say that would be the only thing I think they would need to at least consider if that right type of guy jumped in and was really interested in Notre Dame.
Yeah, this is a very fair and good question from True to Irish. I would say it's one that might have been better on next Thursday's podcast because we will be a day away from the portal closing at that point. Notre Dame will have wrapped its spring camp, and we should have a much clearer idea of exactly who else will enter the transfer portal for Notre Dame. You know, where do they view Justin Fisher? Is he that guy we're not talking about that is right. Davis Sherwood? I think we'll know. Like, if they go out and try to actively get another tight end, then I think we'll see that, okay, they like Justin Fisher, but they still want to augment that position. Otherwise, beyond that, you know, if you had a great player that you felt was a great fit at wide receiver or D-line, I could certainly understand it. But otherwise, I think you're really in pretty good shape at most of your positions, and the quality of depth, as we've discussed at length, is so much better on this roster than where it was when Marcus Freeman took over.
And I know they're healthy and look great now, but it is 4 ACLs and a broken leg between Bowman and Raritan. You have to think of that if you're GM, if not the coach that believes in them. If you're the GM, the guy that I wanted being removed, you have to know that. It's got to be part of the thought process.
Yeah. And we also, I think they asked about Dawson and comparing to Howard Cross. I mean, I see a lot of kind of similarities. If you even just look at their numbers, I think they both had 4 sacks and 7 tackles for loss last year. Dawson did that. I think he only played in 10 games last year. Even standing next to him, like, that guy isn't very tall. He's kind of rounder. Like, he can carry a heavier weight than I think Howard Cross ever could. And his arms are very long. Like, that's something that really stood out for a guy who I think is listed around 6'1". My biggest kind of curiosity is, even if you look at like Howard Cross's production on like Pro Football Focus from a pressure standpoint, like, I think 2 years ago he led the team with 39, and Pro Football Focus is pretty liberal with how it gives those out. And Dawson only, I think, had 12 last year, even though he had 4 sacks, and that they count pressures in with sacks too. So that's kind of interesting. Usually you, I guess, can he repeat that when maybe he wasn't getting to the quarterback as frequently? Like, it sounds like he did a good job finishing when he got there, but that would be my biggest kind of question mark with him.
I think they're different players. Howard Cross, and there's also two Howard Crosses. There's the one fans now remember because he battled through injuries all year, including the beginning of the season when, remember, I don't think people even recall this at this point because the Texas A&M game was like 2.5 years ago, it seems like. Howard Cross, we didn't know if he'd play in that game against Texas A&M because of his hamstring. Now, he got a pressure, and they were very happy about it, but then it took a while to get his second pressure in the month of September. He was not himself. Then he got hurt. Then he got hurt again. He would not have played in the semifinal or final if that was November in those games. There's no way. So the Howard Cross that was winning National Player of the Week awards back to back in 2023 was never there in 2024. But Jared Dawson could have a better year than Howard Cross did in 2024. I could see that. But Howard Cross was tremendous in 2023. He would not be available in a transfer portal if not for millions and millions of dollars. Let's put it that way. All right, we have a two-parter here. For Bill V, 6118, has the transition to 105 players been figured out yet? This is a frustrating question for Bill V. I agree with you. With the portal now open, you would think teams and players would want to know something this vital. That's true. And Club Fred 90, is it possible the NCAA creates a grandfather clause for rosters and allows rosters to gradually work their way back to the 105 limit? And he mentions the possibility of injured reserve for a guy like Cooper Flanagan, who won't play. But I think we can kind of jump into Pandora's box there if you did an injury reserve in college football. JB, we'll start with you.
Yeah, and because this is so prominent and so pressing, it's something I've talked about with GMs from multiple places. It's something I've talked about with Notre Dame people within the past week. I visited Ohio University and spent the day with their coaching staff in staff meetings and workouts and things of that nature on Monday, talked to them about it. The expectation continues to be most people are operating like it will be a 105-man scholarship or 105-man roster limit. It does not have to be 105 scholarships. I want to also make that clear. But everyone that I've talked to is operating that they expect to be on a 105-man roster in the fall. There had been hope this week. There had been speculation. They felt they were going to hear from Judge Wilkin on Wednesday of this week with her ruling and that it would be passed. That's still the expectation. Everyone still expects the House settlement to pass. They don't think the grandfather roster limit is expected to pass. They're far more preparing for the 105. Again, 35 West Virginia players entered the transfer portal yesterday. Part of that's a new coach cleaning house. Part of that is also preparing to get that roster down to 105. Limestone College and NCAA D2 program just shuttered its doors yesterday. That's another 100 dudes going into the portal. That doesn't pertain to this question, but I'm just telling you, more than 1,100 people went into the portal yesterday. Schools are still operating, and I've spoken with several GMs, not just one or two. I've spoken with a number of GMs who all are operating with the expectation it will be a 105-man roster in the fall. You're absolutely right to be frustrated. We're all frustrated, nobody as much as college coaches and GMs, because they don't know. I will say what I said on last week's podcast, and that is, in talking with people, they're trying to encourage guys to stay around, stay enrolled in school, still be working out, whether that's a specialist, and there are people who don't necessarily think that's very realistic to think you might have to go get a specialist off campus because yours gets hurt or what have you. But there are programs trying to encourage guys to stay enrolled at their school And to your point about an injured reserve, it would be an unofficial injured reserve. Mm-hmm. You would still try to keep 5 or 10 of your walk-ons as regular students who would still be working out, staying fit, doing some drills on their own, so that you had
if not you working had, out with the team though, John, to be correct, clear to anybody correct, listening. Yes, correct, you cannot correct. Do that.
Yep. Could not do that, but you would still be staying in shape. You might still be getting in long snaps in the IAC with one of your buddies when nobody's around, or another another walk-on holder. That's the thing. Like holders, long snappers, specialists. Yeah. That's what I'm hearing about as much as any positions from GMs that I speak with. Both the 105, not official, but everyone I've talked to wholly expects it to be 105. And we're not optimistic about the grandfathered roster size. It comes back to revenue share. It comes back to cost. If these schools are going to participate in revenue share up to the max, which Notre Dame has said it would do, $20.5 million, then if it doesn't have to outfit 15 dudes in equipment and it doesn't have to pay insurance on 15 dudes and all of that, the money does start to add up, and that's what they're looking at.
Yeah, and kind of you mentioned like the frustration. I think it's worth like, I guess, reminding people that this is like not how you really want to be making these type of decisions, is like through lawsuits and a federal judge overseeing it and settlements and like trying to get that process. This isn't, you know, I guess from the NCAA potentially, John, you know more about this, but just dragging their feet over the years and trying to just delay these processes. Now these things are getting forced upon the sport in a way that probably isn't ideal. So I definitely get the frustration, but it's unfortunately like the process isn't, it's not like the NCAA is like, oh, we're going to do this in a chaotic manner. They kind of ceded control to how that was going to go.
It's Notre Dame now with the three of Kustak, Monteforte and Urlacher would be down to 115 by my counts. I know some people have 114. I do have 115 as my official count. I don't think it was on purpose. I think it had a lot more to do with recovery, but Notre Dame's spring practice goes well into the portals, near the portals conclusion, I might point out, which that's why Kennedy Urlacher is the only scholarship name you've seen pop there, because they are still practicing. As JB said, they're practicing today. And they will have another practice next Wednesday. And we will speak with Marcus Freeman, by the way, next Wednesday for people wondering. Our next question from Dallas District 5. 5 of the 7 highest rated recruits from the 2025 class have not yet stepped foot on campus. They are Will Black. Well, Burgess has stepped foot on campus. Both Chris Burgess, Flanagan, Golden, and Zachary. Of these 5, which one has the best chance to see meaningful minutes this season?
I mean, I think James Flanagan, kind of based on what we talked with the transfer portal question, that is an area where they could use additional depth. I think the clearest path to a role for a summer enrollee is at that position. And I also think James Flanagan, I think I rated him as my 3rd highest recruit in this class. I mean, it feels a little wrong to compare him, but like just watching his film, like I see a lot of Michael Mayer in what he can do, maybe not quite that level of talent. Obviously Michael Mayer was a 5-star prospect, but
right,
he brings a lot of those traits. He's also a guy who kind of was more valuable to his team in high school on the defensive side of the ball, so he kind of get here this summer fully focus on playing offense, and he's definitely somebody I could see carving out a role early for himself.
Go ahead, TP. I'm still trying to make up my mind.
Yeah, I mean, Flanagan is my choice. The Will Black was a guy I considered back in December because of just uncertainty. I thought maybe Knapp would move inside. I didn't know who was going to leave. But now, even with the Gerby Lambert situation, I think they're going to end up liking their 7 offensive linemen they have there. Now, if Will Black is a unique special player, then he can break into that role, because, you know, true tackles are hard to find. I mean, Golden would be my pick since the day he signed, or since the day he pledged and the day he signed. But man, there's not a lot of room to break in there. So I'm going to go with Flanagan for opportunity. Cree Thomas kind of coming on so strong and Carson Hobbs looking that good makes it tough for Golden. But the one thing we know is if Golden is special and he can focus, because Carson Hobbs mentioned, you know, I was told I had a chance to play and it's my fault I never really did. If he can focus, he'll beat someone out. Mike Mickens affords that opportunity to young players that are special and can get in the lineup. But I'm going to stick with Flanagan. I'm just so high on the secondary right now. I can't go with a secondary player, and I definitely would have 5 months ago.
Yeah, and think about even T.O. right before Marcus Freeman arrived, you would look at Dallas Golden and Mark Zachary. And
yes.
Think,
oh, yeah, yeah. Both again, Golden at safety, Zachary at corner. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of – it's just so many options, but –
Yeah, so I'm probably going to make it a unanimous 3-for-3 with Flanagan, but also note that Christopher Burgess has size, and Notre Dame is good on the D-line, but Notre Dame has shown that if you can earn that role, it will play you a la Bryce Young and even Logan Thomas some, and if there's an injury or if there's a defection at that position over the next 9 days, 8 days, whatever it is, then that could certainly open up a spot. So Flanagan is probably the most logical, best, safest choice, but Burgess intrigues me.
I did want to throw on top of that. I mentioned Golden at safety and Zachary at corner. I was saying back before Marcus Freeman had such a strong, because the days of when Notre Dame was still a really good defense under Brian Kelly, the nickel would come in and be a corner. I mean, the nickel would come in and be a freshman that just won the job because he was a good athlete. Then they found out, well, that's a lot harder than we thought it was going to be. And that guy would lose the job to the Nick Colemans of the world or something along those lines. But those days are gone for Notre Dame secondary. I think it's tough to break in into this one at this point. From VA Doc 88, is it expected that one of our three competitive quarterbacks will enter the transfer portal in search of a new school, or will one of the QBs instead have a deal in place with another school before entering the portal? That is a great question, especially, as I said, since Notre Dame is at the tail end of the transfer portal window.
You want to go first, or?
Yeah, I mean, kind of as you touched on, you know, it sounds like Notre Dame isn't going to be surprised if one of them jumps in. I mean, I think just in this era of college football, from what we've seen, it would be silly for them not to have some, you know, definitive feelers in place, whether that's through their high school coach or if they have some type of agent or manager or something like that. Like those guys, especially when you're jumping in the spring, you want to go to a situation where you can potentially get on the field. You're not going to have spring to prove yourself or kind of work your way up the depth chart. You're going to want to go, if you're leaving now, to some place where you can get involved. And presumably, I mean, financially, you obviously want to have that figured out. So I wouldn't be surprised if a Notre Dame quarterback jumped in. He has do not contact or something attached to his name in the transfer portal.
Yeah, these guys all have reps, and they all have people that are working on their behalves, and people call it tampering, but if it's a third party talking to somebody and that person is a representative of the player, it's really not tampering, and that's what's going on very actively right now. That's what's been going on most of this spring, certainly the last 4 to 6 weeks. Guys on the Notre Dame roster and guys on rosters everywhere in major college football have been talking or having their representatives talk to other schools and figure out what the deals would be. That's why you know that offensive tackles in this cycle are expected to get 800,000 to a million. That's why you know that some of the skill players are getting 750,000 or more. And that's why you know that, especially with a quarterback market that's not as deep, that guys like a Steve Angeli or whomever can go command absolutely a 7-figure deal and also be positioned to play right away.
You guys know my take on this, right? Jack Freeman knows it too. There is no Markinson.
Yeah.
From Hayden Adam Z, one of the knocks on Kelly was not developing guys beyond the starters. Freeman has obviously improved depth leaps and bounds, even with 3-star recruits, for example, safety. Is that due to better recruiting evaluations or putting more emphasis on actually developing players? I do want to interject. I do not have that as a knock on Brian Kelly of the knocks I would have on Brian Kelly. Developing players.
Right.
I would
say depth is better because of both of those things. Look, how much have we talked about how elite Mike Mickens is as an evaluator? And I think you would probably look first and foremost at how quickly and how often Notre Dame's defensive back recruits under Mike Mickens exceed their rankings, or they identify a Ben Morrison very early in the process before he blows up nationally, or a Leonard Moore or whoever. So we talked last summer about Marcus and company's ability to 2-spot at practice. So they were essentially getting 2 full practices in every 1 practice for the entire roster. That absolutely expedites development. But I also think that this has been a very good evaluating group, especially in some key defensive positions.
Yeah, I think if I were going to, I guess, knock Brian Kelly, I would say in recruiting, I mean, I guess not every, for instance, 3-star prospect is built the same. Some are there because they're near their ceiling, but you know they're going to be a quality football player, and some they want the tools or have a lot of the tools. And I think Brian Kelly at times seemed to avoid maybe those players that they knew they were going to have to develop a lot to get out of. I think he wouldn't take as many of those guys, whereas I think this current staff under Marcus Freeman looks for. They want guys that they know can reach a much higher level, and that they, even if they know they're going to have to put in the work early on to get them there, but they're looking for those traits, and they want guys who they can get to be elite level football players. And I don't think that was always a priority under Kelly.
And I do want to apologize to Hayden Adams Z, because one of the knocks on Kelly, he said, was not developing guys beyond the starters. I read that as if words don't matter. That was one of the knocks on Kelly, beyond the starters. But Brian Kelly, very good in player development. That's actually how he ended up getting the Notre Dame job, because of his player development at lower levels. But I think it's Freeman's recruiting, as Drew said, and as JB pointed out. The three-star guys are developable, really good athletes. Really, the identification of some of them has been impressive. If you look at, if you make a line in the sand around guys recruited, I mean, I guess we could just do the Marcus Freeman era, but let's say all the way up to 2022, the three-star defensive backs that made it at Notre Dame, there's more from 2022 to 2025 than there were in the 12 years prior. In terms of, it was a dead zone. Three-star corner was a guarantee third-year transfer. Oh, he's going to graduate early and transfer to Connecticut. That was what used to be. That was the old recruiting policy for that position. Now, Kelly had some really good three-star guys that like Nick Martin, Charlie Weiss brought in Tyler Eifert, but Kelly had some good guys come in. It's just not that Leonard Moore. I know Benjamin Morse was a four-star, but he's ended up being a six-star. I think that it's the evaluations and the recruiting by Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of sticking with the secondary, like even just like finding a guy like Luke Talich from a town that has 10,000 people in Wyoming, and him going out there to convince him to walk on, like putting that level of effort into getting a guy would be like, we see these traits, we want to get this guy on campus. I don't know that Kelly would have been like flying to Northern Wyoming to make sure they get a guy like that on campus who has traits that could develop into a starter by the back end of his career.
Next from Donnelly, 3434. Oh, excuse me, I missed that. Who is most likely to take a starting spot or rise to the top of a rotation? Rate these guys from most to least likely. So let's go with very heavy rotation guy, because there's some non-starting positions available here, and there's one that could start. Elijah Burris and Will Pauling at receiver, Jason Onye and Jared Dawson at defensive line, Luke Talich at safety, and Tay Johnson at safety.
All right, well, I mean, Onye and Dawson are going to play a ton.
Yeah, and Dawson could definitely start.
Yeah, and Burris and Pauling, I think, will play a ton. I think the one that surprises me the most of that grouping would be Burris. I don't think Notre Dame is almost at the exit of spring camp feeling like it's going to be able to keep Elijah Burris off the field, and that's testament to all that he's done this spring. And again, people I've talked to this week and the days after the Blue and Gold game have indicated that the guy has just flashed all spring long, that probably a little bit better than what they thought they were getting, probably a little bit better than advertised, and has really been a force in that wide receiver grouping. And then I think Luke Talich and Tay Johnson will play a lot, probably Luke Talich a little bit more because he can creep up to the box and be a really effective guy against the run and do some other things for you, and he's going to play a ton on special teams because he already has been.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, of those two, I think Talich, if you want somebody who's competing for the starting job, I think he's more in contention right now than Tay Johnson, who obviously they really like and they're willing to talk about. But even your, like you said, like if you need a goal line safety after what we saw last weekend, I mean, we see that Luke Talich in those big moments can still cover, but obviously he can come up and, you know, lay a guy like Aeneas Williams out and knock him back for a loss. So I think that type is huge. I think either Dawson or Onye, or potentially both, depending on what they're doing, could, you know, be first string guys. I kind of think that'll be interesting. Like Elijah Burris has flashed a lot. I think Will Pauling playing behind a guy like Jaden Greathouse will be kind of interesting on how they do that and if they are moving them around, whereas I could kind of see Elijah Burris almost having an easier path to the field, just because it's going to be, I mean, after what Jaden Greathouse ended last season on, it's going to be hard to not have him on the field a ton.
I wonder if Greathouse will run some X too, and that that would shove Burris down a little bit. I like Burris and Pauling. Just one point on Talich and Tay Johnson to not belabor it. It's almost as if Luke Talich is going into his third year of college football, which he is, and Tay Johnson is going into his fringe first, because he missed everything up until November of last year. And then he was, I mean, you know, he played a little in November, but he, if you look, he didn't play in the playoffs or anything like that. So while he was on two deep varsity because they needed him, he was a boundary corner backup to the best boundary corner in the country at that time, and Leonard Moore. So I just feel Talich has a huge experience advantage that is tough for Tay Johnson to make up in the summer. But I really am glad that Tay Johnson has flashed, because that type of athlete's different. And long season, right? They're not looking to play 13 games. So to someone like Tay Johnson can make a huge move as the season progresses. This is a fun one, and specifically for JB, I think, coming up soon. Actually, no, JB, you have the last one coming up, so I'm going to ask Drew to answer this one first. From Hammer Montana, do you think it's a good omen that ND sports Bryce Young and Devontae Smith on defense, or are we a linebacker named Najee Harris away from a guaranteed ability to beat the brakes off Ohio State in the national title game?
I mean, I think that's definitely an interesting omen. I think what's the best part is those guys are also super talented players. They may not win a Heisman like those other two did, for Alabama, but I think the fact that you have, you know, Bryce Young, the fact that we all are so high on him that we think his name, you know, kind of challenges the other Bryce Young in terms of what we could see him doing at the college level, I think is what matters about this. It's not just the names. And I mean, maybe I think we're very happy with the Notre Dame linebacker room too. So if you want to get one of those guys to change their name to Najee Harris, but I don't think they need to go out and find a new replacement for anybody. They have those type of Alabama type linebackers. I think, as I've mentioned, I think they've recruited that position better than anybody with Georgia since Marcus Freeman got on campus. That is a position where they're getting the top two or three linebacker every year almost.
Yeah, and I just like the Hammer Montana name.
Yeah, so I figured you might like that one. Yeah. Shout out every time that. I see Devontae Smith, I still think it's the wrong Devontae Smith, because I watched Devontae Smith eviscerate Clarence Lewis and everybody else. that was a rough day when you saw that matchup happening on the outside.
Yeah, no, I like what Notre Dame has at those positions. And if quarterback play is elite in the fall, then and Notre Dame proves that it can keep all those offensive linemen healthy, then Notre Dame has an extreme ceiling for the 25 season.
I did say in 2019 they're Trevor Lawrence away from winning the national title, so I guess they still would be in accordance with this question. Our final one from Kaiser Wilhelm, and I brought this on the board only because somebody actually responded on our message board thread. This is perfect for John Bryce. Kaiser Wilhelm asks, is this the first time this century Notre Dame has landed a Bubba? Is making strides in closing the Bubba gap a sign this program is headed in the right step to compete with other national title contenders? And I think he is talking about your SEC past, JB.
I'm sure he is, and that's certainly very fair. It's, you know, a Bubba is not a Jim Bob Cooter, which is what Tennessee had. And the guy went to med school, actually, and now is an NFL offensive coordinator. But the Bubba gap, it's really hard to quantify. I would like to see. Maybe we could dispatch Anthony Tresh, Notre Dame's analytics guru, to do some analytical research on the Bubba gap and how important it is to college football programs and their championship aspirations.
Any thoughts on that one, Drew?
No, I think we can let
Jimmy's, yeah, I think we will. But I, in honor of Tim Priester not being on this one, I believe Pete Sampson knew him well, too. Bubba Cunningham, former Notre Dame student, athletic director. I've always talked about this, athletic director at Tulsa and then North Carolina. He came to Tulsa with a trophy to present to Notre Dame. Tulsa beat Notre Dame, and he had to take that trophy home with him in honor of the game. But Bubba Cunningham was a fantastic bookstore basketball player. So if he's listening, this is his last homage, I think, on this episode. He was the best Bubba at Notre Dame until Bubba Frazier. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
All right. Absolutely. We'll be back with another Irish Illustrated Insider podcast on Monday. That is pre-finish of Portal. Pre-talking to Marcus Freeman. So actually we have one Monday and Thursday next week. It's probably important to point out that after next Thursday's, we will have spoken to Marcus Freeman, and that will be the finish of the transfer portal. Is that right, JB?
Closes on Friday. You might have missed this, T.O. Closes on Friday. A reminder that schools have 48 hours to enter those players into the transfer portal once notified. So there will be portal entries, not specifically to Notre Dame, but there will be portal entries trickling into April 27th and 28th just because of the timing.
Until then, for Drew Mentek of Irish Illustrated and John Bryce of Football Scoop, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for listening to Irish Illustrated Insider.